to whether you thought the studies will actually give medical men a way of helping these children that have been affected.
Well, we've recommended, for one thing, that periodic further examinations be carried out. Two possible outcomes may be useful. One is, if the lens changes progress, there are treatments for what ultimately might become cataracts. At this point, they're not sufficient to interfere with vision. Good. If they do, there is the potential for treatment, just as with cataracts that start from other reasons like aging. Secondly, it indicates a subset of the population which perhaps should have closer surveillance to look for to make early recognition possible for other effects of radiation exposure, if indeed these are due to radiation. We still, you know, we have the positive findings. Whether they're really due to radiation exposure is not that clear. All we know is that there's more in the areas where there was fallout, but there may be pesticides, there may be a lot of other environmental factors. The chromosome studies, if they correlate with the eye observations, will strengthen the possibility that this may have something to do with the radiation exposure. If it does, then we should at least be on guard for other radiation effects, and early recognition of some of these may be helpful for cancer and leukemia, for example. Well, I'm talking about this population that we're studying.
Yes.
I think that's what you were asking
about. Yes, right, right.
So it could be an indicator of a need for closer surveillance or early warning of this subset of the population. So the health ministry is very supportive because of that possibility. Of course, they keep changing.
Yes,
the
that's
politics,
what I wondered,
so
if they really will be able to maintain the interest since the economics and the other difficulties.
Well, we all wonder about that. Very difficult, much more difficult than the follow-up studies in Japan, where we got them started, we imposed them during the occupation, and their National Institute of Health recognized the need, and so it's continued.
Tell me, were you able to, 2 years after, approach the actual site of Chernobyl, or no?
Oh, yes. It's taken 12 years, as I pointed out, for the Three Mile Island decontamination to reach a stage where it can be stopped. That was because we really cleaned up the place. What they did at Chernobyl was to put cement over the plant, and they buried it in what is called in Russian a sarcophagus. It was a quick and, well, what we call a quick and dirty approach. Maybe it was the best thing to do at the time, because of the tremendous radioactivity in the area. But and the other reason that they were anxious to do this was because they were relying on power generation from adjacent plants. And Unit 4 is right next to Unit 3, and they share some facilities in common. And they didn't want to lose the next unit at the same time. So they covered the plant with cement, which acts as a shield. in a container because they didn't have a containment as Three Mile Island did. And now the cement is crumbling.
I was going to say, doesn't it go apart sometime?
Yeah,
then what happens?
Well, there's an international effort going on right now to devise the best plan to go back and make it safe again. There's some real concern about it. But I visited the plant, I visited the adjacent one, and looked through a video camera at the debris inside the cement sarcophagus. At the time, the front of the plant was still a sufficient source of radiation exposure so that our bus didn't let anyone off. It didn't stop. We just went by. That was considered safe enough. We were the first, actually, to go in front of the plant because the activity was still, even with all the cement,
measurable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Now that it's cracked, you know, the radiation's coming out
of it. It has the possibility of leaking, and there's a concern because this is the sarcophagus, this mm-hmm. is the all this cement covering the plant, and this is the front end that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The possibility of leakage, also because there is a huge steel disc that sat on top of the plant, and in the explosion it was put up on end, so it's sort of stuck in an oblique position, and there's concern that if it flops down again, that it will raise the dust. The dust is radioactive dust. So there is a feeling that something more has to be done to stabilize it. The concrete, if you have seen in the Soviet Union, the apartment houses, the typical 10-story houses, you generally see that the concrete tends to crumble. They had quotas. You tried not to live in a house that was finished toward the end of the month, because that's when it was catch-up time to make sure that you met the quota. We hear the same thing about cars in Detroit. Mm-hmm. On Monday mornings, you want to want a car that was finished on Monday morning, which is hangover time.
Mm-hmm.
So that also, because of the weather conditions there, they're not. If you're pushing, you don't stop when it's too cold.
Mm-hmm.
And so the concrete is beginning to fail. And the concern is about radioactivity going through and into the environment, into the water, into the groundwater, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think something will have to be done.
Tell me, how long were you in Russia at that time? When you went to the Chernobyl?
Well, I've been there, I think, four times now.
Since then?
For meetings, and I visited the plant, I think it was three times. And the.
But initially, when you got there, did you stay a length of time?
First time after the accident. I'd been there back in the 60s,
yes.
But the first time after the accident was about a week.
Uh-huh.
I've not stayed longer than 2 weeks
mm-hmm.
With meetings and site visits.
Mm-hmm.
It's it never was exactly a fun place. It was a
mm-hmm.
fascinating place, but one always breathes sort of a sigh of relief when the plane took off. It's a sad place. Because the people, they're very, the people that I've encountered have been very pleasant and very bright, and
and not supported by them. And if they had the resources to support them, they would do fine. And many of them are coming here, and we'll get the benefit of
their knowledge.
You know, good people, given the right support. Mm-hmm.
So you, when was your last trip? That was for a conference, I presume?
Yeah, I think I was there about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there have been meetings in other parts of the world.
Oh, there have been.
With
I see.
Our Russian and Ukrainian colleagues. The one in Houston that I just mentioned to you was an international meeting, and a number of people that I had known were over there. I'm supposed to do the first of a series of television conferences at the end of next week. A plan was developed under NASA for telemed conferencing, and I don't
Here?
Know exactly. This will be our side of it. Will be in Bethesda, and theirs will be Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be reviewing discussing three different patients that they're presenting, sort of like grand rounds with discussions taking off from the immediate patient problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I gather that cancer of the thyroid, all three were exposed so-called liquidators. The cleanup was done by what are in Russian called liquidators. And now they're monitoring their health. And I think that's what we'll be discussing. The Uniformed Services Medical School in Washington is the
Will we
the
get it here in Pittsburgh?
I don't know. I don't know
too
many details.
Oh, you'll have to
details.
Let us know.
Yeah,
we'll listen in and watch it.
I'll have to see. I did participate at the University of Ulm last December. This was under WHO, World Health Organization,
mm-hmm.
ages, in a meeting of their directors of their emergency, radiation emergency management organizations. You know, they have designated certain organizations in various countries. Oak Ridge is designated for North and South America. There's another unit in Paris, another in Moscow, another in St. Petersburg, and in Shanghai, I think, and in Hiroshima. And the directors of these meet. We had a meeting which included a test of this same kind of video conferencing.
Mm-hmm.
In that one, a panel in Oak Ridge, a panel in Moscow, and the panel at Ulm in Germany interacted.
Yes.
Yeah, it was very intriguing, and you know, the potential for not just education, but emergency response. In other words, you can't expect to have expertise in a very rare kind of problem anywhere in the world.
Right.
So, but you can have video response so that a panel, regardless of location and without the expense and difficulties of hauling people
mm-hmm.
to the site,
right.
it can provide a lot of expert information.
So you were in Oak Ridge on that group?
No, I was at Ulm.
Oh, you were
I was
at
in
Ulm.
Germany.
Uh-huh.
I've been to Oak Ridge before.
I see. So you went somewhere else.
So I went to Germany.
Good.
Second time I've been in Germany. There's always a bit of a mental barrier to cross.
Mm.
But it was
yes.
very interesting.
Uh-huh. Tell me, when you finished the immediate project at Chernobyl, you spent a week there and so forth. Then you came back to Pittsburgh? Were
yeah.
you then in Pittsburgh? You were
right.
already here
yeah.
at the school.
Yeah, I've been here since 1958.
Mm-hmm.
Came back from Japan to Oak Ridge in 1957 and then came here
mm-hmm.
in 1958.
Mm-hmm.
have been based here ever since.
Yeah. So any of the trips are from here?
Right.
And did you, when you come back, do you share this information with people here, or do you just work with whatever committee you're working with? I mean, is there a learning as a result?
Well, I am
teaching?
A faculty member.
I know.
We do have graduate students
right.
in this field of radiation health, and they certainly get the benefit of whatever I've learned.
Have you drawn any of these students along with you on any of these excursions?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we did have a graduate student from here along one of the panel sessions in Moscow. In fact, the chairperson of our biostatistics department went with me. She and I are working, in addition to the cytogenetics area, the second project I'm involved in on this international or binational collaboration has to do with assuring that the data on the clinical aspects of acute radiation injury don't get lost or buried in Russian storehouse, or worse. And so we have been trying, that was one reason to be in Ulm, and she was with me in Ulm as well. Dr. Carol Redmond is chairperson of our biostatistics department in the school here. Carol was along in Moscow when we met with our counterparts as part of the working group, and we've been told Gridge, because there's a repository there of radiation accident data from the United States, primarily. They do keep whatever information also on other accidents in other countries. Since they are the WHO-designated support group for North and South America, they've been involved in an accident in Brazil, another one in Mexico. They helped out in one in Israel. So that data, those data are in our Oak Ridge database, but we don't have the Chernobyl data.
Mm-hmm.
And at Chernobyl, or as a result of Chernobyl, about 200, over 200 people were treated at Hospital 6 in Moscow for acute radiation injury. That is more than the total of information from radiation accidents. Obviously, in Hiroshima, more people were injured or killed, but that was not a situation where the data could be collected in any complete way. All the resources were gone. The Chernobyl Hospital 6 then has more data, studied people, all studied by the same techniques, all the information kept. They had the benefit of additional resources brought by the U.S., by Israel, a number of countries, France, and it's very important that those data not be lost. And I'm talking about raw data, I'm talking about clinical charts. When we looked at some of these charts, stacks of paper, relatively disorganized, and it's understandable when you have 200 such patients all of a sudden at the same time.
They were all brought to one hospital?
Some were treated in Kiev, but the more serious ones were treated in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
Hospital 6 is the hospital attached to the Biophysics Institute. The Biophysics Institute was the focus for the management of the health side of their entire bomb program there. It was all centralized in Hospital 6. So they had experiences in the 50s and the 60s, things we never knew about. So they had a lot of experience. And then they dealt with the Chernobyl patients, they were about 200, as I say, were brought to hospital six. Not all of them were serious, but a significant subset was serious. 29 of them died as a result of the accident, plus two that just were wiped out instantaneously or very before any treatment could be administered. So,
have you visited that hospital?
Yes. The Biophysics Institute, we were there relatively early. Again, we were, I think, the first Westerners to go in there, with, you know, under security wraps, just as some of our facilities have been. And we are still working. There are various groups that are working on various parts of the problem, but trying to get this into a computerized database so that an investigator anywhere in the world who has legitimate credentials would have access to it and could, you know, get information out that might develop better techniques for diagnosing and treating such patients in the future. The same kind of thing we always do with our clinical records. They are available for
study. Did you have any fears in going there that not knowing what the what could happen in terms of people who absorb some of the radiation, giving it out again, if that's possible? I have no idea. I'm not.
Well, yeah, you know, with an X-ray exposure, there's nothing. If the machine is off, there's no radiation.
Yes.
But for radioactive material, it is all
on
over
their
the place. Yeah, well, we visited, as I said, the plant. We also visited a nearby town where all of the workers lived. The Soviet system, you build a facility in the middle of nowhere, and then you build a town so that the workers could live there. So Pripyat was less than 5 miles from the plant. There was a town of about 40,000. Town. It's a city of 40,000
yes.
people.
Pripyat.
P-R-I-P-Y-A-T is the usual.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be pronounced more like Pripyat, but it was evacuated, and because of the radioactivity, and never has been repopulated. Some government people are using some of the cleaned up buildings, but it was an awesome sight. We had to stay in certain roads. I tried to pick up some soil samples to bring home for measurement, and a gentleman in a trench coat spotted me from behind, and yet, and we got a 15-minute lecture what not to do.
Except that you walked on that soil.
Yeah, but they measured our shoes before and after.
We
were
in
limited to relatively clean areas. The street was okay, but I went to the gutter because I figured that's where it would be. They didn't allow that.
Mm-hmm.
But psychologically, the town was quite striking. I mean, if you picture a city 40,000 people, these 10-story apartment buildings, the civil, what would be the mayor's office for us, with the banners still, with Lenin's portrait behind it in the recreational park. The Ferris wheel is sitting there. The signs, the first time I was in Pripyat, the signs, most of the apartment buildings had signs. You don't see commercial advertising. You think, great, a country where, look at billboards. But the billboards are there. They're all advertising the communist system. So the signs were still all up, these exhortations that I don't know how well they worked, but they made somebody feel they were doing something. And one particularly striking, it said, let the atom be our servant, not our master. And it was the next time I was in Pripyat, about a year or two later, the signs were gone. Lenin's banner was gone. But the buildings, they haven't cleaned them up, so the curtains are still there at the windows, and there was a store that had television sets, which, you know, television set for them meant something like 6 or 8 months'
nice.
Pay.
Yes.
And they just were sitting there, and nobody stole them. By now, maybe they have, but it was a very eerie sight,
mm-hmm.
and no people.
They were all gone.
Yeah, they were all evacuated about the third day into the accident. 150,000, 135,000 people.
Well, when you came back to Pittsburgh, it must have been very calm or dull or whatever, in contrast to what you had done in Kiev and Moscow.
Well, yeah, I guess particularly the first time when it was still the Soviet Union, one always feels a little tense. The hotels, every floor, there's a woman sitting at a desk and sees when you come and sees when you go and sees who's with you and keeps track of everything. Yeah. That was supposed to have been done away with, but the last time I was there, it was still there. But mm-hmm. I think now it's more a matter of employment rather than surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it never, you know, knowing the system at all, and little things, you and look up somebody's phone number, there are no phone books because they were very careful about information. And, you couldn't take pictures in certain areas.
Did your wife accompany you?
A couple of times, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she even got out to the plant.
On the bus.
Reactor on
mm-hmm.
the bus, yeah.
So you came back.
Well, but, you know, we assume that we're no longer in reproductive age and,
right.
you know, didn't worry that much.
Yes. Yeah.
But I did wear the usual measurement things.
You did?
Yeah.
Did you put one on your wife?
No. She was with me.
I see.
And I did the first time when I came back, went to the whole body counter across the street.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very sensitive radiation detection device
Good.
That measures activity mm-hmm. in the whole body, and I did a measurement.
Good.
You know, that's part of the job, like any medical
mm-hmm.
situation. You take
right.
a certain amount of risk, but you're cautious and mm-hmm. Minimize them.
Mm-hmm. So then you came back and you went on with your teaching, and you have, but you have participated in different groups since. Is that it?
Yes, the research goes on,
Is this part of your position here, that you would be doing some of these other projects?
Oh, very much so.
No.
The faculty are evaluated on the basis of teaching, research, and service. So that, you know, my involvement, for example, on the advisory committee is public service, and it's unpaid service.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody's paying for it, it's the University of Pittsburgh
right.
because I'm using time as
Their
a faculty
time.
Member to serve
mm-hmm.
on an advisory committee that's looking for the development of a low-level radioactive waste site in Pennsylvania.
Right.
That's public service. The research, I've already given you some idea.
Right.
Clinical service, our clinical cytogenetics lab is one of my major activities.
It is.
it's a clinical lab used for diagnostic tests.
Is that here in the School of Public
Across
Health?
Across the street.
Oh, at the medical.
Administratively, it's in the School of Public Health.
Yes.
But it's located in the Presbyterian.
So
University
you go
Hospital.
Over there?
As soon as we finish, Tuesdays and Thursdays, we review the cases which have been processed and sign out the, come to conclusions. These go into the medical records, the patient charts.
These are patients at Presby now?
About a third of our cases are at Presby. A large number are outpatients. We provide this for the VA, for Children's Hospital, and for many of the hospitals, about 30 of the hospitals in this region send their samples for chromosome analysis. We process about 700 or 800 samples a year, which it's a very laborious technique. We do the adult cases, cancer and leukemia primarily, transplant cases. The Children's Hospital does primarily genetic diseases, abnormal children, and McGee Women's does primarily amniocentesis, the in utero chromosome examinations.
Now,